the kind of a fold back that he has referred to in several different ways in terms of thought. And he is not really wrong. It's a very, very high level of awareness and accomplishment. But I didn't get into the thing about the vibrations as much. I already did. It's on, well, you got it on tape, anyway.
Yeah, we got it on tape.
And so it can be looked at and studied, but particularly the aspect of experiential processes beyond thought, where our awareness is capable of functioning. If we're locked into the below a million vibes per second, it's like connected to the persona. You see, the senses, all of the senses are, you know, the eyes are not to see with, the ears are not to hear with, etc., etc. They are only designed to step down what is happening to function with that part of the brain that is involved with persona. You follow?
I do.
All right. Now, that's just like a little covering, like on the front of your face and back into your brain, etc. But the rest of the whole thing is receiving background noises all the time on this plane, as well as receiving the background noises of the universe that are a part of your being. And that part of your being, if you move beyond the personality and thought, then the experiential thing that you're experiencing is all of that level, and I believe that the full extent of that is in tune with the universe. It's not connected with the whole universe because it only is connected to once every four quadrillions a second. I mean, we're a wonderful instrument that has that much. And I'm not saying that's everything, but it's an implication of everything. Anyway, it's great to have this experience, I'll tell you that.
I agree, and I think that was very eloquent. Scott, are you getting this on tape?
I got it, Bob.
Okay, good, because that's good. We're getting Howard.
We still got it on tape?
Yes, he got that on tape.
Well, then I'll go to the next phase.
Good. I just wanted to say, Dave, you're doing the Howard Cosell post-game wrap-up here.
Yeah, well, let's see how it works out. Anyway, the thing from which Rai came, we'll, for the sake of argument, call dark energy, because we can't see it, but it's there more brightly than our normal perception can see. Okay, the whole thing that set off multiplicity was one move, and everything that's happened since is a result of that one move. One move created the multiplicity, which created the possibility of pursuing the one aspect too long, and a priest judge to put a stop to it, and splitting of Ray into the dimension of man, and then all through the years, Ray and Isis, then like return to essence in the sense that all of the separateness, because Ray was the first separateness, so all of the separate no separatist no longer is separate, but it still implies it's within the multiplicity, but that first move may possibly be recalled, but then there would be no recall. The waves of energy of that is when Doobie was asked whether it was cosmic consciousness, and he says, no, it's cosmic awareness, because cosmic awareness is that in which it all swims. That consciousness was created. Okay, I think I...
You got it?
I think I got it, yeah.
Let me echo what I think Bob might say.
Which Bob?
Bob Carr.
Bob who?
yeah, Bob Carr, Bob who? With the Bob Hooster.
No, there you go.
There you go.
When are you going to use that one?
Or have you already? Yeah, when we get the economy fixed, I'll start using that.
Promises?
Yes, promise. I promise. But the I talked
now. Whose economy?
Yeah, that's Hooster's economy. Hooster.
Okay.
I've had you know 5 or 6 hours of talk with Robert Carr on Skype, and much of what you and he talked about, I talked about, and I would say what you said, and this and that. But, you know, when you recount the story of Ra'i and Isis and what you just said, that's another way of explaining through thought what the physicists are trying to do and what the Buddhists said and this and that. But
right.
We got
a lot of stuff on there that if some goddamn scientist looks at it, he may wonder a little bit, but I don't know how it's going to get to him. I never did worry. People used to come to me. I never went to them, and so this would be where somebody's looking and then sees it, because it isn't going to be by promotion. You know what I mean?
Yes, but I'm saying that Bob Carr would say that what you just said is in the realm of thought, and so I'm asking you, what is the significance of the story you just told?
Somebody asked.
And that's what
came. I'm a reporter. I'm an interpreter.
That's, yeah.
And I never allowed entities, you know.
Yes.
I have never allowed entities to enter into any of this. And so that's why I have been virtually free of divisions or, see, I used to tell people after the early LSD sessions that I was an integrated schizophrenic.
Like you accused me of being controlled schizophrenic.
Well,
remember,
sort of.
When I was on the radio.
Sort of.
Yeah. Maybe not integrated, but a form of controlled schizophrenia.
Yes. Yeah, and you still got it going for you.
Yes, yeah.
But that's because you have a certain kind of intellectual structure that uses it and probably requires it, and so when I say, just let it be.
Right, and that's what I do. But the story you told is what you say when you're asked why the terms Ra'i and Isis and not Adam and Eve or whatever. Why those terms?
Well, that's what came, you see, and it's almost as though it came long before concepts of Adam and Eve came about. And the point of Adam and Eve being thrown out of the garden came from the tree of knowledge that they were not supposed to partake of. There's thought, right?
Yeah.
And so until you get to the point where you can go beyond thought, then Akasha can come back in and makes all the elements, because you have air, fire, water. But when they were thrown out of the garden, the heavenly waters were taken away. You see?
Yes.
Which is Akasha. And without Akasha, everything rusted and died. And that's when you would surely die. So if there is eternal life, it's going to be whenever there's Akasha comes in and participates it, and then there is no death, there is no rust, there's no decay. But it's not in thought either. It's because of not being in thought that this can enter back in.
Right. It's interesting. It's like Robert Carr, he says, when he speaks, it's thought. Therefore, it's going to be limited. So he acts out the limitation, which is all that thought could see. Thought can only see that it is all just thought and nothing more. And it's almost like he's leaving it unspoken. What you say is their past thought.
Well, you remember Krishnamurti in Switzerland told him in this small group?
Yes.
Stop. And then he started again, and Krishnamurti told him, stop.
Yes.
Now, what was Krishnamurti telling him?
He was telling him to stop the whole community.
Stop thinking. Stop. But he always had one more check with the gap.
One more thought.
Can I interject?
Well.
Wait, Scott wants to say something, David. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add.
Speak up a little, Scott.
Okay, can you hear? Okay. I wanted to add on to what you just said about Krishnamurti talking about having thought stop. A flavor that he adds to that is he talks about the fact that the past is in movement within us. And you have to bring the entire movement of the past to stop, to get the thought to stop.
I remember a talk by Krishnamurti at Ojai, and as everybody left and we were all going down the path, at one point I stepped up on the little embankment alongside the path, and I stood there and watched these people go by like a river. And then at a certain point I decided, well, I'll join the river. I just thought I'd throw that in as an experience that related to Krishnamurti and the river and standing off on the bank and looking at the river and then moving back in the river and the stream.
Right, and that relates to Robert Carr's metaphor of the
In a sense, I was thinking about when he was talking about it, yes.
Yeah.
So let me say just a little more. This idea of getting the thought to stop, it occurs to me that thought is form, and if thought were to...
Thought is what?
Form.
Form. Now, where'd you get that?
Well, it has to be some kind of phenomena that is comprehensible, so therefore it has to have some kind of former...
All right, I can tell you simply. If you have a flow that's traveling along and as an experience, and it's, you can consider whatever light and dimensions it would be. Anyway, it is traveling. But the moment that it turns back and looks on itself, it's going the other direction, parallel and looking at itself until it decides not to, and then it is energy traveling along as experience and not in thought. Does that do it for you, Scott?
Not quite, because I don't fully understand that, and I will spend some time looking at that, and maybe...
Well, you... But that yeah,
what I want
to look at it, you're looking at the experience by turning back and looking. You're not going ahead. You're turning back and looking at the thing that's happened.
Yeah,
the
I think
experiencing
that
is has been a happening, but when you turn and look at it, that process is thought. It's going actually the other direction from experience, and in order to stop it, you just turn it 180 degrees and flow the direction of experiencing.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. Thanks, Dave. I got it now, and I can see how...
And I get it every day.
Yeah, and you said, like Krishnamurti said, I never cease meditating. So to allow that movement to move through you moment by moment, you have to be pretty free of having, things that you're, I guess, suppose unwilling to experience or come up against.
Unwillingness to stop. The willingness to stop stopping.
But then every once in a while I have somebody tell me to start. and then I say, what? I've already started. I mean, what do you mean, start what?
Yeah, right. Thought is movement in Dave's story, fact of Rai.
It's looking back on the experience, not experiencing, but looking back on the experience. And then when you stop it, you are now in experiencing. You might say when Rai decided to return to essence, he turned the other direction and started moving in experience.
But you described experience as a stream, so that's a form of movement too, isn't it?
I missed part of that.
If to move into the stream of experience implies that experience itself is a form of movement.
Did you get that, Dave?
Yes, but it's not a movement in thought.
Exactly. Yeah, I understand the distinction now of what you mean. I was wondering
it is the movement in that everything between a million vibes and four quadrillionth vibes. It's in that area. It's not in thought.
Yeah, thought throws up an interference pattern.
Well, it just takes the energy and halves it or more. You know, it's no longer experiencing. It's looking at experiencing.
Yeah, halves it. Dave, I want to just say that my term doubleness is about this. Now, the doubleness is the awareness of itself and looking back, but the doubleness is a given anyways. And when one,
especially if you're a Gemini,
yeah,
takes one to know one.
Yes, and you got the whole dialogue down there. And the but the images that come up from the looking back is the interference and the creativity and the imagination.
Oh yeah, I mean you can be an artist,
right? And all images are attempts to show what you just said.
Yeah, well, you see, I take it back to where the image starts and challenge the very starting process of image, because image is not reality, it's not real, it's not experience.
Yeah, so comment on this, like a Buddhist master once said, Dave, all phenomena is illusion. Do you agree with that?
Yes. Except the Zen master whacked me over the head and said, how solid is that? You know.
Yeah, the statement, Scott, by the Buddhist comes with so much historical baggage that we might reject it. And so then we come up with a new thing, which is what Dave's doing. Like you.
Do you see him zigzag across the universe, Scott?
Yeah. See me zigzag. But I wanted to add, do you think Dave's Krishnamurti repeated the ancient wisdom or came up with something new about it?
Who?
Krishnamurti.
Krishnamurti asked us to look and to listen and look. That was the way to find it, that he didn't have it, and he would, if you followed him, you would just have a terrible time, because it would be following him.
Yeah.
So the path is within, it's unique, and in a sense, it is terrible. But it is. And so you just continue the isness, and perhaps a certain kind of emanation or a glow or a manifesting of high vibes appears in your consciousness, experience, and communications. I'm sorry, I got off on thought there for a minute.
It was clear. Now, did what Krishnamurti asked us to do, look and listen, was that the first time a human teacher ever did?
I'm sure it's not. I'm sure that the whole thing that, let's see, Kitzelman made those 16 hours of tapes that must be somewhere that were about the original thinkers, that other thinkers were derivative from other sources or without names. But in terms of original thinkers with names, he had Lao Tzu and a maybe on Confucius, Kapila, Buddha, and I think the Krishna was sort of like a subheading from Kapila. And then there was Abraham, and
that's five.
Jesus and Muhammad, and then he said he believed that Krishnamurti was the original thinker of our time, and I agree. Now. And then there's David E. Wooster. Did you hear that little squeak come in there?
Yeah.
Pip squeak?
Yeah.
But that sounded like your voice.
Yeah, very good. Takes one to know one.
Yeah.
Dave?
Yes?
When Krishnamurti talks about how hard it would be for you to follow his path because of the terribleness of it, I got the idea that he was referring to the notion that he had penetrated down to the core of the suffering of humanity, and that was terrible and very hard to allow yourself.
Well, I think that is true. However, I believe in this thing that he wrote called The Path. That was about 30 pages of mimeograph paper that was probably published privately in the 30s. And there were still a lot of theosophists that were trying to get him to relate to him, and they wanted to relate to entities and all kinds of stuff. And yet they wanted to follow him. You see, all right, it was like, if you want to follow me, you're going to follow into the desert without water, without food, without clothing, and we're going to go endlessly, endlessly, endlessly as an experience. And he does that for 30 pages. So how dare you try to follow me? If you follow me, that's how rough it's going to be. And actually, all he meant is, don't follow me. Don't follow anybody. Have your own experience. Hmm. Anyway, I am going to have to get off the phone because I do have to go to the bathroom. So lots of light around you, and pass it on and make it clear and all the rest of it. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Hey,
Scott.
Yeah.
We could continue.